Okay. Okay. Perkamet brachis. Tanya. Reb Shimon Oimer. Shalosh matonis nosna kadosh baruch hu Yisrael. Vekulom le nosin ela le de Yisurin. Ve'elein atoyer v'aretz Yisrael v'olam haba. So these are three matonis, and these three came through Yisurin. Toyer minayin tziv asher gevesh et tzeno ko. Et Yisrael minayin dechsiv yadatim lavecho, ke kashe yasi ish es b'noi Hashem akech miyasreko. Uksiv basay ke Hashem akech v'yecha l'aretz toivo. Ha'olam haba minayin dechsiv kiner mitzvah v'toyer orav derechayin t'cheres musa. So certainly, I guess, two out of the three we can sort of testify. Torah is not an easy to come by. Eretz Yisrael is certainly not easy to come by. And Olam Haba, I guess, will take the Gemara's words for it. That these all three things come with difficulty. Yesh lishol, lama nitnu elu matazeh de yisurin. Kvar be'arnu, ke yisurim zichu ha'nefesh. ולכך כאשר ישראל קונו מיילון הבדלס מן הגוף צריך קודם מירוק וזיכוך הנפש עד שרואה לקבל המיילה הקדושה. Like we've explained the last times, for a person to move from a more what's the right word from a more megushimdika world where he's very sunk into his gashmias and very attached to it, to be osek in things that are ruchnius is difficult. And unless a person is able to move away from it, he's not able to get to it. These matanis are all very ruchnius. There's a fascinating nitziv. The nitziv says, as regards the the Nitziv says, as regards the when the Meragim came back, and they said that Kitoiva Aretz Meoid, Kalev said. So the Nitziv asks, what is the Tov Meod Meod? What's so extremely good about it? And Nitziv says that in any place that is physically good, you tend to get very very shakua in it. And you lose track of any ruchniyistika enterprise. Eretz Yisrael, it says, has that maila that even though it can provide much comfort, it still doesn't allow for the person to sink in a very, very content way, and so on. It's hard to pinpoint these things, but the fact that Eretz Yisrael is never—it's always in turmoil. In whatever issue it might be, it's not the one distinction you note when you go from Eretz Yisrael to any other place, that every other place seems to have like a very normal life. Things are quite quiet. Someone had emigrated to Toronto from Eretz Yisrael, and he a non-from person, and the person wrote that it's so pleasant to wake up when the important headline in newspaper is that due to rain some sort of game or parade has been cancelled. Not much more exciting happening than that. And that's Israel, unfortunately, life is very exciting. But it also makes a difference in a person, whether a person is facing real challenges and issues and stuff like that, or a person is just worried about the football game and the parade. The person tends to become much more absorbed in the gashmis around him. So therefore it's something which is it's the common denominator of these three matanas taivis. And he says v'dovaze doimer li yisurim shel av k'mesha amru. And this is very similar to Yisroel Shavu we spoke about before. Well, the kach omer gimel matanis tevis and gimel madrega shel kedusha. Bezeh ke eretz Yisrael hi kedusha lehoy ruim Yisrael madrega kedusha zay shinchlo eretz kedusha nevdelas. At shigilam Yisurim shalom zichu chanefesh esilu kaguf adi Yisurim al ad shiruyim lekabel ma'as haktusha. So they needed a zicha guf so that they could be mekabel at Yisrael and be zochet at Yisrael. One. Now he says, but there's a difference. Omnam ha'aretz ba'asma hi gashmis rakshesh haktusha. Eretz Yisrael is physically, it's a physical entity, so it is Gashmis, but it happens to be Kaddish, so it's a lower dag of Kedusha. We Yisrael Zeya Torah, she Yisrael Nevdelas, she Sichlis Bulti Gashmi. Torah is totally Sichli, something totally not bound to anything Gashmi. Ve Lo Yizochu Gamken La Torah Rak Bismatus Agufa De Yisurim. So the fact is that even when we're in this world, we can and we do learn Torah, and we understand it, appreciate it, and so on. So there is some sort of interaction between us and Torah. But Olam Haba, Olam Haba Nivel Gamer, Olam Haba is something that's totally beyond us. Bezeh Amayla Shlishes Anivdelas. Ulefikach Lezoche Yisrael Olam Haba Kiim Al Yedei Yisurim Shemimatin Aguf. Veshulkach Higio Madrega Anivdelas. Yesh Kol Ahovin El Gim Madrega Zu Al Zu Veseh Shem Kach. Yes. Yes. Yeah, he's talking of, well, he, however you'll slice it, Olam Haba is the final stage of perfection. And the machlokas of Shalom is when that happens. Is it before, is it after Tchias, is it a second stage after Tchias Meisim, is it Tchias Meisim itself? But however it is, Olam Haba is the final stage of that. So whenever it happens, that's what we're talking about. So the transition of the world to Olam Haba comes through difficulty, and that's why you have all of the Gemaras that indicate how difficult and stressful it's going to be in, before Mashiach comes, before Olam Haba, all of these in Yanim, which we don't have even a clear understanding as to why. It's just that there's a list of Melchemes Gog and Magog and a lot of other things like that. You could learn that it has something to do with Averis that we'll be doing, but the Mashmos is this is normal part of the process. And the answer is because anything which requires an upping of a madriga is going to be stressful. Let's get similar. If we want to give an example to it, in a physical world, no speed of travel is particularly stressful, but acceleration is always stressful. Acceleration always puts pressure on a person, and the greater acceleration, the more pressure. But the speed itself is not that which puts any particular pressure on a person. I guess unless it's very, very slow in a bottleneck in the traffic. But speed is not the way, it's lack of speed that creates stress. But in terms of stress on a person, it's because of the acceleration. Any change, and therefore, when we want to change to a status of more ruchnius, we have a problem because we're not there, and to be something, any type of ruchnius means we're less physical, and that in itself is a stress. It happens to be, by the way, one of the flip sides of the following issue, and I guess in being in a school, you can appreciate it. A school, and the truth is a yeshiva for sure, but the truth is, any type of school imposes a burden on students. Let's specifically speak about the years from, let's say, 13, 14, till 21, 22. The biggest burden that it places on kids that age is that sitting and learning, or studying for that matter, is almost antithetical to what the kids are about. Kids want to run about, they want to do what they want to do, they want to wake up when they wake up. Taiva is beginning to rise. And in general, they fret. They want to be physically loose and mentally unfocused. That's if a teenager would be left to his metzias. So the fact that the school is not that way, well, that's correct. It's a period of developing a child from one state to another state. And that's why when someone just comes and says, you know, you see the kids are restless, that within itself is not the reason not to have schooling. But the issue that needs to be considered is at what point can we do it? It's just like tearing ourselves away from Gashmias. If we wanted to work on tearing ourselves away from Gashmias, we decided we'd stop eating some favorite dessert or something, it's doable. If we would do like a crash where we eat only, I don't know, bread and coffee or whatever it is, that's it, we would basically end up, flopped out. We couldn't do it because there's a limit to what you can push yourself without basically closing down the system. You know, if some kids have a natural predilection for learning and sitting and studying, and that's great. Most kids fret a bit. And for that, the training process of transforming them from one state to another state is similar to this point of Yisurim. And for some kids, it's an impossible task to demand what you're demanding of the average kid. And for them, it usually becomes devastating. It becomes really terrible. So the chachma is not to take one position or the other. Well, I was also a kid once upon a time, and I sat myself down and I studied and that. Well, you were different. On the other hand, to say, well, you see the kids are fretting and upset. Well, kids would love to sleep till 12, want to play video games till late evenings, and then I maybe run around with a car or something. Given for it's quote unquote natural for a teenager, you could, that would probably be close to natural. You do want the person to break himself in to develop the part in himself that's of chachma and dorish chachma and likes that male singi, and that's a transition. It's not an easy process. But the chachma is also not to just be blind about it, but to be sensitive about it and to ask yourself, if a kid succeeds at something, he will keep doing it. So a kid that has a decent head and he does well, you can push him further a bit because the success is going to reinforce itself. A kid who doesn't have easy success and he just sees himself failing time after time, that's not going to, so he's going to just sort of let go of it. But the etzem fact that it's not, school is not going to be fun the way a beach is pashit. And there's a process of sort of moving from one state to another state. No, there's no way to get around it. Yeah?
Okay, so why is a Nazir have it like a ton of hate in him? Because he was mafreshim. If that's the world's given, so that, he should get whatever you get out of the world, why is he called a chayte? Because he's bringing Yisurim on himself, right? Because to assume to become a Metlis Gashmias or whatever.
Right.
That's right. Why is he called a chayte?
So a lot of different ways the Gemara says, and the truth is this is really something we can extrapolate to real life. The Gemara says because what would happen is they would become invariably tamei, and then they would have charat on it. In other words, when you push yourself to a point that you begin to have charata, then you're doing much worse with that. You're sort of pushing yourself, and it's going to become counterproductive. So And that's what happened. They would end up not being able to stand that rigor, and then they become trapped in this trap of not being able to get out of it. So what do they do now? So they keep doing averus. They have, they regret, and it's important. All the things when a person learns a lot, and then he has charata, because it really was. It's like a spring that snaps back much more viciously the further you pull it. So if a person's not sensitive to that, the person becomes a choyte. That was the reason why Reb Shmuel never ate from anybody's from any kav nazir. There's a second reason, I think. It says because he's mitzayer himself. If a person, you know, there is a very fine distinction in Kochus HaNefesh between the person who's striving for the good and therefore denying himself, to the person who's has some sort of we'll call it pathological enjoyment of the denial. A person who for instance, let's give an example. A person is very busy doing his business. He's very successful. He's got a lot of deals going, things like that. And he forgets to eat lunch, he forgets to eat supper, and he's so involved in what he's doing. So that person is not focused on what he didn't do. He just so thrilled with what he did do that he just sort of gets out of, you know, he's into what he's doing. Another person has this need to show himself as a sufferer and an ascetic and, you know, look at me and how much I'm suffering. That's not a healthy thing. Sometimes it soothes a person's own conscience. You know, I've been involved once or twice with people who did some quite terrible things, and they did all sorts of kind of mortifications, which I think helped ease their conscience, but I don't think it was improving them. I think the Raya is one of them, certainly. Kept doing what he was supposed to do, but he was so infatuated with his own mortification and you know, and so on, it sort of gave him perverse type of pleasure. A person who's striving to become closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that's his focus, he's not being mitzayer himself. Yeah, and I was medayik the word mitzayer, that if the person's focus is because he wants to be a nazir, which means higher, separated, above, closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu, then it's something worthwhile. But if a person is doing it just so that he dwells on the pain part of it, look, you know, all you guys are you know, sitting around like slobs and eating. I haven't touched a morsel for 2 days, and that's not feeding the right part of the person of the person's psyche. So. So those are two possible reasons why he's a chote. One is he took on something himself, which he trapped himself into a place that he can't get out of. And secondly, his focus was more on the suffering than it was on the good and on the mile that he's getting over there. There's a vert apropos the second one. There's an extraordinary vert. From Rabbi Isaac Sher. Rabbi Isaac Sher was the Alta Slabatka's son-in-law. He was profound. He had a profound understanding of people, as one would expect. He was a prince of a person himself, a big Talmud Chacham, a very, very special person. And he once commented that Chazal, in one place, when you speak about Avshalom, it said he has long hair because he was a Nazir. It says another place that has been Sora Morer, which means he indulged in wine and so on. So how can you know, a nazir can't be Masar Mor, but Masar Mor can be a nazir. You know, a nazir can't drink wine, Masar Mor has to drink wine. You know, to become a Masar Mor, you drink wine and so on. So he said a vart, which was kind of, I guess, a characteristic of that school of thought. He said, Erflecht fressen tanesim, which means he would indulge in fast days, meaning yes, he was a nazir, he abstained, but he gorged himself with abstentions. He you know, it was feeding it was feeding his wrong side of himself rather than a good side of himself. I don't know if you're familiar, if you Kafka has a story, Lavdel. I forgot what his thing. I actually think I read it in Hebrew the first time. It was about a guy in a circus who would fast, like you know, they had the displays in the circus, the fat man, the tall man, the lady with the beard, you know, that those type of circuses. And one guy's thing was he was in a cage, and he would fast X amount of days, and there would be a sign up how many days he's already not eating. And I don't know, it's a long, long time ago, but the gist of it is that he was able to do an amazing amount of days, but at some point when that exhibit became unpopular and like that people just didn't bother to go from it, he couldn't do it anymore. In other words, I guess the point of it was he got his nourishment, quote unquote, from the public adulation, and as soon as people couldn't care less about it, he simply he couldn't hold it on. So there was, it was feeding a whole different part of his self, and that's why having exactly understanding your kohos hanefesh and understanding what's driving you is vital to doing anything beyond halacha. Whatever is halacha, and a person does what he's supposed to do. And whether we don't think about the kohos hanefesh, maybe it's in wrong side. I have a chiv to wake in the morning, I have to put on film. But as soon as a person goes into lifnim yeshuah hadin, where a person is doing things that he's not absolutely required to do, so the person needs to have a good handle on himself as to what's what's going on, what's driving it. I guess once we're off topic, I Tish B'Av when I spy the kinnis. So in Arzel Levanon, I usually pick about a gadol who either lived through the war or died during the war. And over the years, you know, each year I try to find someone else that was a big figure in the Shoah, and, you know, a big person who. And this year I spoke about someone that is probably not familiar to anybody. His name was Rev Gadol Eisner. He was the Mashpian Ger. He grew up in Poland in Lodz before the war. He he was a real Kotzka Oyver Hashem. He had the real feel for Avodas Hashem on the Kotzka Nusach. He survived the war but lost everything and everybody, and very, very, really lived with tremendous agonies. And yet he was always happy, upbeat, sharp-witted, humorous type of person. And he was the Mashgiach in Kedush HaRim Yeshiva, which was the flagship yeshiva of Ger, and he really established the new Dor. He's the one who actually gave over the Mesoros of Ger to the Talmidim. His name was Reb Gadol Eisner, and he died in the 80s. So, so one of the stories, I guess, that brings out this point very, very sharply. He spoke about pre-war Europe. And in they didn't have formal yeshivas in Ger. They were organized in Shtiblach, and they had like, I don't know, 50, 60 Shtiblach in Lodz alone. And each Shtibl had its own flavor, ranging from, you know, Amcha, stump people, just a place to daven, that's that, to people that worked on themselves, to people very serious of the Hashem, to people who sat and learned all day, even though there was no kolol, they sort of somehow scratched together a few pennies here and there, but really learned a lot of mesiras nefesh. Those were the different. That was life like that. He was one of the people, one of the heads of what was considered the most firebrand shtibel, the sharpest, the sharpest of Hasidim. That was called, 55 shtibel 55, on the name of the street that they were. So there's a story there where they announced who's ready to. They would sit and learn all day and go home at night, And at night, the courtyard would be closed. The guy would close the courtyard. That was the meaning in Europe. They would lock the courtyard for the night because of people who got nobles to come and so on. So once you made a decision to stay the night, you stayed. There was no going out. So at the end of one day, the Gabe gets up and he says, "Are we staying tonight?" And there was silence. And he said, "Fine." So everybody stayed through the night. Yeah, and an hour later or so, they served bread and butter and onions for everybody. And they learned through the night, and then they learned the next day. Then the next night, the next evening, the Gabbai again says, "Are we staying?" And everybody stayed. The third night, he made the same announcement. And then Rav Gadol made a second announcement, and he said, "Everybody should answer truthfully." And people picked themselves up and left. In other words, they were being mechanech themselves on two things. First of all, to push yourself to an extreme. And secondly, to be honest with yourself. It's good that you can push yourself, but you need to know, is this something you can push yourself to? When you're working out, so you try a heavier weight or a quicker thing or whatever it is, and you see sometimes it feels okay and you're up to it and you naturally just go into that, and sometimes you can't, and you basically, the worst thing is to entrap yourself in a situation where you feel you're a traitor if you stop. And you really, really don't want to do it. So the double chinuch, to be able to push yourself and be able to be honest with yourself, that's how it comes together. So I guess going back to the first point, pushing a child, it needs to always bear in mind we try and we see, and then we hold at a certain point. My father-in-law told me, I guess in the most mysterious thing, my father-in-law's Rebbe Bracha, it was a very bright person, extremely bright. His father was a real taskmaster. So he told me that when they were in vacation, when they went away for dacha, so his father had time for him. So his father made up that every morning they would learn together. The first day they did a blat gemara. He tested him the next day on it, and he knew it. So his father upped the ante to two blat. The next day, he tested me, knew it, so up to three. So my father realized that if he shows how much he can retain, they're just going to keep upping the ante. So he started fumbling. So his father yelled at him, but that became the ceiling. So the ceiling was now, three blat. But there was a certain awareness that you pushing is only works if you're later sensitive to know what the ceiling is, where we're holding with that. Okay, let's see the last line here. V'yeshcha lahavin eil gimadreg zu al zu. V'seir shem kachu. Eretz Yisrael Torah olam haba. Rak shazochen v'yaseir shegiyu al shemadreg zuav dozen vo. So he said, so even though the Gemara says Torah Eretz Yisrael and olam haba, but the real Seder is Eretz Yisrael, Torah and Olam Haba. He says there's a certain Seder here that's significant. And the Maral, when he uses these types of Lashonos, Yeshcha Lahavin El Gimadeg Zolzu, he usually means Miramis, something, I guess, Malpi Chachmas Apnim. We'll try to sort of get a feel for it a little bit. When we talk about the spheres, which are in Haggis of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there are many ways to divide it. The one way to divide it is between the lowest Madrega, which is called Malchus, then the next 9 Madregas, and then a Madrega called Kesa, which is really 11 Madregas. And that's cheating a bit, but it depending on how you structure it, a different sphere falls out if kesef falls in. So you end up with 10 at any rate. But there is, they're not 10 evenly spaced spheres. They're not 10 even on Haggadah and Kaddish Baruch Hu, kind of, you know, all of the same cut and just one and the other. The Nafka Minas are as follows. The middle Madrega, let's speak about that. That represents the corpus of Hashpas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. And that is everything Ruchni that flows into our world. So it's Ruchniistic and it's coming down into our world. And therefore it is, what's the right word for it? It's perceptible, or it's possible to grasp it, because it comes into our world. Then there is a lowest Madrega, that's called Malchus, which is the Ruchnius as our world reflects it back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So having taken in what we've gotten, what HaKadosh Baruch has invested in us, when we produce it, so for instance, let's use a mussel in a field, the water, fertilizer, seed, and so on that has been invested in the field, that's the hashpa from coming into the field. The fruit that the field produces ideally should be giving back every bit of the water, nutrients, sunlight, seed potential that has been planted in it. And that's called Malchus. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Bria as reflected by us. Then there is a Madrega that is beyond us, even in terms of Ashba, but has potential of some point of coming in. So the water that's not being used, but the water that's in the reservoir, the fertilizer that hasn't been used, but it, in the shed and so on, those are things that have the potential, and they have the potential to come in. But that means also that we don't have any sense of it. It's not something that we don't see it. We don't actually know it. So. And the mashal I gave, it's just more of the same. It's more water, more that. But when you're talking about Ruchnius, you're talking about Madregas and Inyanim that are b'chlal not in this world, and we just know that they're beyond. If we want to, if we want to distinguish mitzad the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's a name of Yudke Vavke, which means everything that exists. And then there's a name, Erker, which is a future. I will be. It's something where it hasn't come into this world yet, and b'meila, I may or may not even know what it is. So we have three Madregas. We have Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is the world absorbing Elikus and HaKadosh Baruch Hu and reflecting it back, similar to what we say in Yedid Nefesh, Toir Eretz Mikvedecha, similar to the moon. When we say that the moon will be like the sun, it means not that it'll have its own source of illumination, but it will accurately reflect everything that the sun put into it, without swallowing the vast majority of the light. So that's the Madrega, that's what Etzrol is. Etzrol is a place, a very physical, absorbs Hashpa of Ruchnius HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and produces fruits that have Kedush in them, and so on. That's one. Torah is we're dealing, before we do the mitzvahs, we're dealing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Sivuyim, and so on. And that's the Metzias of Torah as is, so it's a pure Ruchnius entity. It's called Kulis, you know, it's Torah Hashem Tamima, but it's come into our world. We know what it is. we can study it, we can even say chidushim, much the same as, you know, we can say chidushim about things that we don't know exactly what they are, as long as they're part of our world. And then you have a third madrega, which is ayin l'ras biltecha. It says different things, but this thing is something that Ayin L'Rasa Zolasecha. It's something that it doesn't even exist in our world yet as Ruchnius, and that's Olam Haba. So all these three. So when the Gemara picks three things that are Ruchnius, it's not only picking just three things out of a hat. These are three madrigas from the thing that is most closest to us, the thing that is furthest away. And you also see, the more a person is physical, the more something is ruchnius, the less it interests him. So the marshal, you can take people that are quite coarse and have them subscribe to some sort of basic code of behavior. Listen, you don't want to get knocked about, don't knock about anybody else. So fine. That's the type of thing that he can somehow relate to, even as coarse as he is, it's still part of his life. But when you start speaking about, you know, aristocracy and nobility and things like that, they don't resonate. His being is way too coarse to resonate anything like that. So the more refined a person is, the more a person is can listen to somebody's messages. So the Yisurim serve to make. So that's why Olam Haba requires the sum total of difficulties that everybody's gone through and everybody will go through. That's what Olam Haba is. It's a sum total. It's the highest madrega of Ruchnius, and it requires a complete letting go of everything else. It's one of the reasons why in Zikna, as a person ages, so we always, everybody complains about aging. You know, I lose my sense of taste, I lose my sense of this, I lose my sense of that. And of course, we blame HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's the norm. But try to understand a little bit what's the point of that zikna. And the point is, I mean, imagine coming to Olam Haba when the thing that turns you on the most is the bagel. And it requires a chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That there's a sort of a transition when things that are not meaningful in the big scheme of things stop being meaningful to him. So you have three types of people. You have a type of people that did it on their own from a young age. They delve into ruchnius, and that's what they cared about, and they pulled away from gashmius, and they're very ruchnistic people, and that's that. Ashreu. Then you have the vast majority of people that we succeed some, fail some, and as we age and taivas calm down and ritzonos calm down and things like that, we slowly relate to those things. There are people, and it amazes me to no end, there are people, I guess I understand that if they have a different perspective on the world, but at the age of 80, they're desperately trying to get their fill of taivas. And doing everything that they can to keep the level of taiva as a young person, because if there's nothing down the pike and they have no sense of a ruchnistic world, then really it's every bagel plus whatever else they're into that makes that difference. So the yisurim of zikna, the general sense of malaise of a person aging, is part of that process. So sort of, you know, the person is expected to pull away and to slowly begin to realize that, you know, there's a lot more to the big life than the things he's been bound to. Okay, any questions?
Yeah,
Okay. So next week I will not be on. Next week I have the mirror thing, and then but afterwards, Mitzvah, we'll be good. Okay. Take care. All the best, friends. Bye.